Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaseva, your honorary First Inclusion Project podcast host. Welcome back to another episode of the College Takeover All Things Inclusive Edition, where I'm having thoughtful conversations with some incredible college pals with the hopes of inspiring you all to engage in conversations and actions that will create a more inclusive world. Today, we're talking about toxic masculinity and a few other things with my guest, Judd.
Hi, everyone. My name is Judd. I am a junior at Loyola Chicago, and I am absolutely delighted to be on this podcast. It's always been a dream of mine to actually be on one. So to be able to do it with such a wonderful woman in Kaseba, this is very exciting. So I'm very much looking forward to this, and I think it's going to be really exciting and really fun.
What a lovely introduction. I'm so excited to have this conversation. So we're just going to dive right in.
Let's do it.
For the people that don't know, can you explain what toxic masculinity is?
Absolutely. I want to just go ahead and say that toxic masculinity is definitely it's a social and cultural pressure. It's a pressure on men to be defiant, brutish, strong, and in so many different ways. Toxic masculinity has a lot of harm. It's a harmful norm. And it not only affects their behavior, but it affects so many others' behavior, including those around them, especially women. A lot of the ways that toxic masculinity starts or grows or originates from is the rejection of feminism or feminist ways of life. It's toxic masculinity, like in the name, is all about, being masculine and the masculine way of life. It's not that toxic masculinity can make men be just completely opposed to women or it's not just one thing. It has tens of different kinds of ways that it affects people. Being hyper self-reliant, discriminative, can lead to physical aggression, verbal abuse. There's just so many different ways that toxic masculinity afflicts so many men across the country today. It's sad. It's harmful. And it's definitely not a healthy way of life.
It absolutely is not a healthy way of life. And for the people who are, wondering or still saying, I don't think toxic masculinity exists, or I don't think I perpetuate the negative aspects of toxic masculinity. What are a couple examples you could offer up as toxic masculinity?
Yeah, I think people who say that are often blind to the actual harmful effects of what toxic masculinity really does. I think if you deny that it's if you say that it's not a real thing, I think you're being closed off to the fact that many men are afflicted. And I think a good example of that is especially on college campuses, and I know that we're going to talk about this later in the podcast, and I feel like it's such a good point to bring up, but you have almost a different norm of students, or of specifically male students on college campuses who emanate this toxic masculinity. And for men, I know a lot in frat culture, and this is something that I feel like just exuberates toxic masculinity, total degradation of women, and seeing instances of you know, men being physically aggressive or abusive in relationships with their partners who become very verbally abusive. It's something that we all see. It's something that we all are aware of. And I know statistically, 1 in 4 women throughout all 4 years of undergraduate time in college are actually exposed to or are involved in a sexual abuse or assault or rape instance by a male, by an identifying male. So, you know, it's hard to say that toxic masculinity isn't real, because it most certainly is. And it just really affects more people than the average person would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And because, you know, you and I are both college students, how is toxic masculinity plaguing college campuses, and how can we combat this?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I said, you know, statistically 1 in 4 women, we're looking at even more than that, statistically 26.4% in a poll from Forbes shows that they were, you know, sexually assaulted or raped throughout the 4 years of college. I mean, that's something that we need to talk about more. I mean, I read that stat and couldn't believe it. I thought that it was, I thought there's no way, that can't be right. But then it turns out, okay, yeah, it is. You know, it's mind blowing that many women in 4 years are afflicted with the effects of toxic masculinity. It's not just, you know, that aspect of it. Toxic masculinity affects more than just, you know, a partner or a female. It affects other men. It affects other groups of people, other races, other sexes, other genders. It affects so much. And on college campuses, I mean, you have the melting pot. You know, you have a melting pot of students, you have a melting pot of faculty. And that's now, I think, for a lot of men who, you know, are toxic in their masculine ways, exhibit a lot of behavior towards other groups of people, feeling like they need to be, you know, doing better than everyone else, doing better than a specific race, doing better than a specific gender. You know, I know a lot of people who I have encountered throughout my time in school are you know, men who really show off their toxic masculinity by saying extremely hateful things about women, in particular, just kind of grilling the fact that you know, they feel better in class, they feel better that they're you know, a male and not a female, and that they don't have to, you know, they'll say things about specific majors, you know, saying like, okay, well, you know, nursing is made for women, you know, something like that, and being very generalistic, right? And so, I mean, in more ways than none, it's there's a broad variety of the way that it affects so many different students. I think people need to be weary of men on college campuses who, you know, exuberate this sort of behavior. It's something that is so common, and it's very difficult to deal with. I think combating it is a completely different story. I think combating it is a difficult task, because so many men act in this way. So many men are you know, having this behavior. So many men are raping so many women on college campuses per year, per 4 years, you know. And I think combating it is really standing up to it and calling it out right on the spot. I can't think of another way that would be better than that, to just immediately stand up to it, immediately call it out, because they get power in numbers. You know, a whole group of men who all act in the same way, or all, you know, have toxic masculine ways, are all going to want to be pooled together. They're all going to want to have power in numbers. So just kind of calling it out, and I think will bring a lot of awareness to it. I feel like so many people already are, you know, that's even having this conversation with you now, we're starting the process of calling it out, so that other people can listen and say, you know what, I have seen this, I have been afflicted by this, I have been afflicted by this behavior. And then they can say, you know, maybe they'll have someone in mind specifically and say, okay, well, you know what, I'm going to finally do something about it. I'm going to tell someone, I'm going to let someone know, I'm going to speak up for myself, I'm going to stand up for myself. And others should do the same for those who are being afflicted. You know, it's not, no one's in this alone. No one should be
100%, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, people should be very collective about this.
In your opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where where do you think this stems from? Does this stem from how men are being raised, how women are being portrayed in the media, and men not having conversations with other men regarding, you know, how they choose to behave and act?
Absolutely. This is a, you know, you ask a very interesting question, because it's unbiased. You know, there's so many different ways that you can look at it and talk to a person and say, okay, well, you know, maybe they were raised by, you know, super religious parents who wouldn't let their kids go out and enjoy time, spending time with others. Maybe they were secluded. Maybe they realized that, you know, in their time, they preferred to be alone. Maybe they never had a real father or mother, you know, in their lives and were raised by, you know, another family member. There's so many different ways that it can be brought up, and it's hard to really put a pinpoint on what the specific way is that someone, you know, could grow up and have these behaviors. But I think a lot of it is that everyone was so complacent with this behavior for so many years. I think when people hear, okay, toxic masculinity, and they hear it in the news, or they hear us, and they you know, say, wow, well, that's really interesting that this is now becoming an issue. It's not now becoming an issue. It's always been an issue. It's always been an issue in the same way that people will, now that we're getting equality and fairness in women to men, and we're getting the equality and fairness in an African-American woman to an African-American man to an African-American woman to a white man. You know, people are reading about this, and they're like, why are we finally finding this out? We're not finally finding this out. This has been going on for years. People have been too complacent. No one has been talking enough about it. And I think that's what a lot of it is. I think the main question is, why haven't we tackled this earlier? Why haven't we tackled this prior? Because you know what? If you go and you watch TV shows from the 80s, 90s, 70s, you see a lot of discriminatory comments towards women, or you see a lot of comments towards people in other races. You try and find a TV show that didn't have a, you know, if there's 8 cast members, they're all white men, right? And there's maybe there's one woman, or maybe there's one African-American male, right? It's totally different. It's totally different. And that back then, it was normal. It was normal, right? That's not normal. It should never have been normal. It shouldn't be normal now. So I feel like that is the main thing that people need to focus on. They need to focus on realizing this isn't a new issue. This has been something that's been going on. So let's figure it out now. Let's tackle it head on.
Which is why, you know, I agree with you 100%. I think people who are listening to this really need to grasp that gem that you just dropped, that, you know, call it what it is. Yeah. Don't sugarcoat it. You know, don't curse people out unless you have to, but make sure that, you know, you call it out for what it is. There are ways to do that in a way that is respectable and will get your point across. But if we keep being complacent and not saying things, are just, oh, that's just how this person is, you know, I think it's going to take us back a few steps when we're trying to go forward.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. I think what the most difficult thing will be about combating toxic masculinity is actually do, you know, when you call it out, when you are in that instance and you can finally say, hey, you know what, I'm not going to deal with this anymore. I'm finally going to stand up for myself. How are you going to react in a way that isn't, I don't know, quote unquote, triggering, right? You know, we don't want to cause more problems or cause someone who's being aggressive in verbally or physically, you know, towards another person. It's you have to be able to do it in a way where there's a solid conversation. I know that's not always going to happen. I know there's a lot of, you know, there's going to be a lot of turmoil in that way, but it's, I feel like the men who are proud of that sort of behavior will grasp that they're actually succeeding in making a woman mad, or making someone of a different gender, race, ethnicity mad. You know, I think they're going to find a lot of pride in that, because that's what their goal is. That's who they are. They're going to think that they're stronger. And then when they see that, they're going to say, oh my gosh, I'm really making these people upset. I'm doing the right thing. I'm proud of myself. You know, so that's, we obviously can't let that happen. And you know, a lot of it's going to be just that constant conversation that needs to happen. If we can really start to see some visible changes in men who are toxic in their ways, you know, I think there will be a collective effort to kind of bring that sort of behavior out and kind of kick it out the door. Do I think that that's going to happen right away? Absolutely not. And do I wish it would? Yes. You know, I think we all do. No person wants to have to, you know, endure any of that sort of behavior. So yeah, I mean, I think it will take time, but you know, in baby steps, we do the right thing.
Now, the demographic that happens to perpetuate toxic masculinity the most, unfortunately, happens to be white men. How do white men use toxic masculinity for their gain?
You know, I think a lot of this is, that same former, straight male, or straight white male, that status, right? That status of the way that it's been kept, the way that society has been for straight males. I feel like that's the larger demographic. And I feel I can totally understand why this group, this specific group of men would be, you know, more toxic and exhibit toxic masculinity in their ways. And I think a lot of that is, it's like I know from a young age, a lot of men that grow up, or you know, say, let's say, you know, there's a group of friends who are, let's say there's 4 to 5 friends and they're all in middle school. And, one of the boys is more feminine, you know, maybe he likes to, wear some more bright colored clothing, or doesn't usually wear the same shoes that, another boy may wear. And I think it's very easy for 4 of those boys to pick on that one boy and say, oh, well, you know, he must be gay. You know, he's got to be gay because he wears bright colors, right? And the boy, right. The boy who just likes to, be himself is very, hurt by these comments. He doesn't want to feel like an outlier. And it's, maybe one of those 4 boys who likes to pick on this other one is like, ooh, I see that this is bad. I see that this is bad, but I don't want to be in the position that he's in. I don't want to be made fun of either, even though I agree with him. So I'm just not going to say anything. And you'd be shocked of how many times I've seen that personally, in groups of kids where there's a kid being picked on, and he's being picked on by straight boys because he's different. And he doesn't, it's hard for him to find more friends because he's constantly picked on. And when he's picked on by a large pop, quote unquote, popular group of boys, all the others, the entire rest of the student body is going to say, oh, well, you know what? We're popular. We're the more popular kids. We're not going to want to be a part of, anyone who gets picked on or is made fun of like that. And you'd be surprised how much that grows and how long that stays throughout middle school, through high school. I know, for me, I always felt I was so quick to be able to call that sort of behavior out. You know, I was always someone who stuck up for the other kids who were different. You know, I had a lot of friends. I mean, here's a bit of a demographic from my region. I'm from the south of Buffalo, and I grew up in a very rural area in a town called Allegheny. And our school graduating class was about 70. And there were 3 African American students in my entire grade.
Wow!
And the rest, I would say, there's only two people who were Asian as well. So the majority was white, and it was very easy for students to get picked on who were different. They found it really hard to find like they were, at home. And so whenever these sort of situations would happen, or I'd see a kid who, wasn't walking around with a friend in the hallway or never had, someone to talk to, I would reach out and say, hey, really hope you're doing okay. I'm here, I'm here to talk. And, I would love to, sit with you at lunch or hang out or something like that. And they always felt so, seeing their smile was like one of the best feelings, because I felt like I was really making their day better, because they didn't have someone to come up and say them. And I would get made fun of. I was called, people would call me gay because I had gay friends. And as a straight white male, it's like, okay, well, I'm trying to help them. We can't leave each other out of this situation that's happening. So I myself was ridiculed, but I feel that more people need to stand up for this sort of behavior, but it's something that just lasts for so long.
I love that you brought that up, because I think that there is something that is missing with people that have an issue with this. And I want to know from your own perspective, why weren't you threatened? Why were you able to go out of your way to befriend those of, who were different? And because I'm pretty sure you had to have known that me doing this is going to also put me in this whatever bracket that, you know, everybody else has done. But what caused you to make the right decision?
Well, I knew I was doing the right thing. I knew that I was doing the right thing, and I never let anything else stop me. That was the thing, is I wasn't going to sit by and take what was being thrown at me. I always knew it was the right thing to do, and I didn't care what anyone else thought. I feel like I was never, you know, one thing I'm so proud of, the one thing that I'm so proud of is that I never was fully integrated with these quote-unquote popular kids at school. I never wanted to be. I never thought it was cool. I never thought it was fun. I never thought that, you know, getting hammered on the weekends and making fun of other groups of people was truly exhilarating, you know. And so I was always friends with people who were, you know, everywhere, you know, lots of different people. And I always knew it was the right thing. I always felt comfortable. And I, from a very early age, I knew that I was just going to do what I wanted to do and do the right thing and not care what other people thought. I was proud of myself. I felt proud because, you know, it didn't matter to me. It didn't matter to me if people thought I was different because of that. I don't care. I'm going to go to college and I'm never going to see you again, you know? And it's so funny to me as well. I feel like the kids who were, the kids who loved to pick on other kids and stay in that group of toxicity are now the kids who aren't finding their true people in college. Whereas, you know, I feel better than I have ever felt having my people. I know meeting you, even you, right? You know, even spending our time on the student government there, met a lot of people who I never would have, you know, like I didn't even know those kind of people were out there. You know, growing up in such a small town it really brings you that sort of mindset. You know, it's hard for people to break out of that small town mindset. So I knew I was doing the right thing. I still feel like I am.
I mean, and you just made me do a little bit of reflecting on my own self, because I really kind of have come to the conclusion, well, I've always been a firm believer in that if you know who you are and you're content with that, nothing else matters, right?
Yep.
No one else can put whatever label on you. Absolutely. And then it's automatically true because you know yourself. And I think that is where we as people really need to, and society need to get to a place where we can accept people for who they are. Because I think a lot of these things happen as a result of insecurities and seeking for validation and going with the majority, whether it's good or bad. And Absolutely. The one thing is, it's unfortunate, but I do think that it is true that sometimes, you know, one, doing the right thing is not always easy. And two, just because the majority is not behind you does not mean that you are not doing the right thing. And also, even, you know, with just stereotypes, being able to live your life without these biases and stereotypes on other people really will expand your horizons, truly, because I can't imagine what it would have been for me if I went off of the, you know, assumptions of you being white, being from a rural town, and just automatically being like, nope, I'm not talking to him. I had no idea you were even from a rural, you know, town. But what drew me to you was the way in which that I saw how you acted with people, your character and your values and, you know, your passion for human rights and all of these different political issues, and just that you see people for who they are and what they offer rather than what they're not, or trying to, you know, shift them in a box.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I believe that we have to get comfortable with having uncomfortable conversations. Yes. And I know that this next topic we're about to get into is highly controversial, and just want to disclaim that Everyone has the right to their own opinion on this topic. Please be open to this perspective. Yeah. We have to be able to have these conversations and talk about it. So,
absolutely.
As many of us know, SCOTUS recently overturned Roe v. Wade, threatening the bodily autonomy of many. There have been a lot of men having a lot to say about this decision. So, should men even have a say in this at all? What are your thoughts?
So, yeah, as you said, you know, let's really hone in that these are opinions and yes, these are not facts. These are just the ways that we're brought up and the ways that we think. So I love this question because I love my answer. Should men have a say? No. Should men have a say? Absolutely not. I don't think it is in any male's place to dictate whether or not a woman has a right to an abortion. I am absolutely shocked and dumbfounded that a woman's right to something that should be a right has now been revoked. I mean, I'm still rattled by it. I don't understand. I don't understand the men who want to have this control. That shows that we are still living in a patriarchy. That shows that we're still living in a male-dominated society. How much democracy really is there? I could go down a huge political path about this. I could rant about this for hours. That's how furious I am. And you know, I spend most of my night studying and researching policies and the history of basic human rights in general. So to be able to have something stripped that is so controversial, that has been in place for over 50 years, I'm shocked. And to the men who say, I absolutely believe that I have a right to dictate, or I believe that I should have a say. Why should you have a say? It's not your genetics. I mean, you have obviously different parts. Like, let's not be oblivious to the fact that we are not the ones who go through these sort of procedures. So why should we have a say? I don't think that it's in our place. I feel like it is a woman's body. The woman should have the right to choose.
It's as simple as that.
I don't think it really has to be that difficult. I think it's a power grab. It's definitely a power grab. It's the men who love having the sort of control over their partner. I think that's still very, very, very prominent now. I think it's so obvious. It's so out there. I don't think a man should have a say.
Well, thank you for that one. I think you had a great answer.
Oh, thank you.
White fragility is the discomfort and defensiveness on the part of a white person when confronted by information about racial inequality and injustice. Why do you think some white men are defensive about being confronted by information regarding racial inequality and injustice?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. This one is a pick your brain question because it's not only is it almost it's like a class social question. It kind of touches on the entire past in general and the norms that are still in place from years and years and years and years ago, decades. And I think a lot of white men feel targeted or feel frustrated or upset, or they feel nervous about being confronted because they're so used to having the white privilege and the white power. They don't want to have that change. As a white man myself, I have always tried to be very open and fully inclusive with everyone that's out there. And I've never tried to use my whiteness as a way to improve in society. In fact, I've never thought about it like that. I was never raised to be like that. And I know demographically, growing up in a small town, you are more likely to have more Republican or right-wing views. Whereas God bless my parents, we're both, blue, both very, very Democratic and very liberal. So, I just grew up in that way. I was raised to be that way. I was raised to include all. I was raised to not use my whiteness as a sort of privilege. But the thing is, a lot of men who are white, who are, very toxic, as we've discussed in toxic masculinity, they do not want to see their their higher position stripped from them, right? They don't want to see themselves become equals or lesser, right? And to them, of course, it's terrifying. You know, they don't know what it's like. They're not empathetic. They're not sympathetic towards women or to anyone of any different race or gender. They're not being inclusive at all. So I think they get worried because they don't want to be, quote unquote, lesser in society. And this touches again on the point that I had made prior, that society is still it's still afloat in the way that it has been for the past 10 decades. This is the way that it is. People aren't just finding out now about this stuff. This stuff has been happening for years and years. This is the same sort of realm that is white privilege, as in toxic masculinity, right? We have two things that people may be saying, wow, you know, this is really something that we should be talking more about. This is brand new. This is new to me. No, it's not. Again, it's not. And it doesn't take much to do some, sit down, do some research, and read a little bit about what's going on. Or you know what? Be active in your community and go right. out and really hear what people have to say. Go out and find out what people, what is this protest down the street? Well, I don't care. You should care. You should care because it's happening. It's people need to be more aware. White men, straight white men specifically, need to be the most aware of this sort of behavior and this sort of way of life that has been happening and unfolding. I think it's white fragility is something people don't talk about enough, and people should not be scared to talk about it. I you know, as a straight white male and hearing that question, it's like, it's funny because I don't even consider myself in that position. I am very open. I'm very inclusive. I want everyone to be equal. So hearing that question, it's like, oh my God, this is really happening. You know, people, yeah. Like there are men out there who are really doing this, and I don't want to hear that. I don't want to see it, but it still happens. Nobody wants to hear it or see it, but it's happening. So, you know, just raising awareness about it and really having, like you said, these discussions that are sometimes difficult, but they need to happen, and they need to happen on a large scale. So,
no, absolutely. What is the, if there is just one thing that you hope the listeners take away from this episode, mm-hmm. what is your advice to them?
To speak up and start having some conversations. People are too complacent. Stop being so complacent. Start having conversations with your family, your brothers, your sisters, your kids, your best friends, your aunts, your uncles. Start having these conversations. As you know, when Trump was elected and politics became heated, because this was a new time, this was a new era for the United States, if you want to call it that, because there has been many other times just like it. But people then became scared to talk about politics because the country became so divided. Everybody became so divided. I know people were divided before, but it's nothing like it was before. It's so divided now. Everyone is so strict and held to their viewpoints that they don't want to give in. They don't want to have the conversations, and they're too closed off to hear what anyone else has to say. And that's just not okay. People need to start opening up a little bit more and saying, you know what? It's okay to differ in views. It's okay for my best friend to be a Republican and for me to be a Democrat, or vice versa. It's there needs to be an openness. So communicating. When I say communicating, I mean communicating effectively. I don't mean communicating by saying, I hate the way you think and you're
right.
wrong.
Right.
I'm saying communicate in a way that says, you know what, we differ in viewpoints. That's okay. I would like to hear what you have to say. My viewpoints may likely not change, but if they do, I will be open to hearing about it. It's okay. Everyone's different. Not everybody can be the same. So just communicate with others around you and do it in a way that's very healthy.
Right. And I think, you know, one of the best advice I ever got from a teacher in high school was, she said to question everything. I think, and that means, yes. 'Cause I think where we also go wrong is that people tend to question those who have differing beliefs than they do, when you also need to question yourself. Ask yourself why you believe the things that you believe in. Why do you agree with the morals, you know, that you abide yeah. by? Ask yourself, get grounded in that, and you know, like you said, be open, because I don't think living in an inclusive world or having an inclusive world, it's not going to mix with complacency.
Mm-mm. I definitely agree. Totally agree. It's definitely question yourself. That's one of the biggest things that you can do. Question why you think the way you think. And if you don't have enough information on it, then look it up. And I
feel
like this, you know, that's also another thing that I think other people should take from this podcast as well, is that when you have a belief and you're so firm on it, and you tell the world about it, you tell the world why you feel that way, back it up, have the facts, have the research. You know, I feel like one of the most mature and responsible things that you can say throughout your entire life is, I was wrong, I should have done the research, or I'm not knowledgeable enough on this subject, so I can't talk about it.
Right.
People do not want to say that. People don't want to own up to it. It's okay to not know enough about a topic. It's okay to not know.
Nobody knows everything.
That's exactly correct. Exactly. Nobody knows everything. It's okay to not know. It's okay to be unaware, so long as that you don't have a viewpoint or an opinion on it, unless you have all the facts. That's just the way it is. And I know, you know, some people will listen to that and they'll say, well, the media is fake, the news is fake, how can I get any facts? Well, spend some time sitting down and reading. Read some peer-reviewed articles, read some data, read some research. Go out in your public, go out in your towns, your communities, ask people, ask why certain things are the way they are. You'll get tons and thousands of different viewpoints. But, you know, it's up to you to decide, okay, this is the most logical, mature way to go about researching or finding the right idea.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Judd, for all of your words, your wise words of wisdom. I mean, you really just shared so many great gems of knowledge, and truly am so appreciative of that. So thank you so much for coming on here and saying what you
thank
have
you
to
so
say.
Much. Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. This is, I'm sorry I went on some long tangents. I get very passionate about social issues, but no, I really appreciate this opportunity. This is so exciting. I can't wait to share this out with the public, and this has been an honor to be able to talk to you. I know you're one of the best people that I know, and I often think about you and how strong you are in your political beliefs. So it's exciting to have people like you in the world, and this is a great opportunity, so I really appreciate it.
Appreciate that always. If you're hearing this message right now, it means that you've listened to the entire episode. And for that, I would like to thank you all so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode just as much as we did. So until next time, keep conversing, keep engaging, and never stop learning.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.